Welcome back to Legally Uncensored. I'm your host, Demetria Graves, a licensed family law attorney based in California. On this show, we aim to provide you with valuable tools and knowledge to navigate the often treacherous waters of family law through discussions and uncensored insights. As we tackle the complex topics that lie at the heart of love, relationships, and sometimes even war, it's always clear that we have much more to discuss. As I have been mentioning, this season, we are diving into the unspoken shadows of traumas within a divorce, from narcissism, untold stories, and beyond. Today, we're diving into the topic of blooming after divorce. While I may not be an expert in gardening, we'll draw some insightful parallels with gardening tactics to help you achieve full bloom in your next season. Our guest today is Kola B. Talkin, a mother, gardener, and the founder, host, and head creative of the podcast and media platform known as Black in the Garden. Black in the Garden resides at the intersection of Black culture and horticulture. As a millennial Black plant enthusiast, Kola is a voice that confidently declares that conversations will be had on a range of topics that directly influence and impact Black plant keepers as we impact and influence the world. Please welcome Kola B. Talkin to Legally Uncensored.
Hey.
Yay.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy to have you. Thank you. Kola, tell us a little bit about yourself and your podcast, Black in the Garden.
Sure, yes. I am Kola B. Talkin, the head creative and all of those other hats that I wear as best as I can, and hosting the Black in the Garden podcast and being heavily involved in every aspect of making it as successful as I possibly can, and doing so on the heels of a divorce, as I started the show within, I would say, about 3 weeks of the beginning of the process of divorce, as in husband just exiting the picture in somewhat an abrupt way, but I'm sure we'll get to all of that. And the Black in the Garden podcast is really what I call the anchor of the whole operation. I got incorporated as an LLC around, I believe, about 2021, as I recognized coming into podcasting shortly before the pandemic began, launching me into a new career as a single mom. Shout out to the single moms. And becoming a single mom while trying to figure out, how's this podcast stuff going to work? With having such a significant passion for plants and horticulture and all things related to anything having to do with getting into the soil, and also doing all of that and figuring out the entrepreneurial aspect of things kind of by force, because the kids, they couldn't go to school, and who else was going to take care of them? What facility was open during the pandemic, you know? So that was a time of I guess in my industry, we call it forced growth. And I rose to the challenge. And, you know, I very rightfully claimed the description of resilient in doing as much as I've done and trying to keep things as smooth as possible on the other side of divorce, which did officially become finalized in 2022 last year, about a year and some change ago. So I'm single, y'all.
Well, congratulations to you. And sometimes I spend a lot of time through my career in the divorce space. So I think it's important to hear from those who have made it to the other side, mm-hmm. if you may. Some people don't think they're going to make it. Some people are very, very stuck in that trauma. So I'm really happy for you and what you were able to birth after your experience. So with that said, can you paint the picture of your marriage before the divorce and how you got to the point where you decided this is no longer working?
It took me, I would say that it took me about half of the time, like a solid 4 or 5 years in the marriage, to recognize that there was a cycle that was taking place. And so when I referenced the perennial plants in understanding like that life cycle of it's dormant for a while and then it blooms and then, you know, you enjoy it and then it gets to the end of that bloom and then it dies off again and the whole process starts again. And it reminded me, or it reminds me, because at that time I wasn't even paying attention to plants, but I was paying attention to what I was feeling and what I was noticing as far as these patterns of emotional abuse, dealing with some narcissism that I was not aware of. But in dealing with that, and being someone who is always trying to be aware of patterns and connecting dots, what I recognized was there would be the peaceful time, which I would say, let's call that the blooming time. And that would be the time where, you know, things are as cool as they could be, where we're basically on good terms. And then there would be a disruption of that point in the cycle because there would be some kind of disrespect or, you know, a crossing of boundaries that was bothersome to me. And then me having to deal with that and try to deal with it peacefully if possible. Generally, it was never peaceful. And so that disrupts that beautiful blooming cycle. And it's like this beautiful, just imagine a flower, just, you know, your favorite flower, just for fun. And imagine it just wilting and dying in that process and going through the turmoil of the conflict and then getting to getting past that and actually finding a calm place again and kind of getting back into resetting that cycle. But I would say that the time after the conflict and the turmoil would be kind of like that dormant period where you're just trying to figure out, okay, when is the bloom going to come back? You know, and there's something to that dormant period and that tumultuous period. There's something to knowing that the bloom is coming back, that optimism that we're holding, that I was holding on to, and those who can relate have held on to, because you know, okay, if we could just get through this, then we'll get back to that beautiful bloom again.
Yeah, I talked to someone on one of our previous shows about toxic hope. Like, you're just hoping that you can get back in what you've called the bloom stage and get back to that place that you know is safe and our nervous systems aren't out of whack. And I don't know if you experienced this, but a lot of narcissism survivors experience the silent treatment. And so if you have an anxious attachment or something like that where you like to communicate, then they are in terror while they're going through the conflict stage and having to experience that trauma. But everybody wants to get back to the blooming stage. So my question to you is, how many of these cycles did you go through before you said, okay, enough is enough?
Too damn much of of those cycles. I couldn't tell you an exact amount. I could say it would be two or three per year. So in, let's say, about 7-8 years times three, a solid maybe about at least 20.
A lot.
If we're going to get into the math of it, right, a solid minimum average of about, you know, a few a year, averaging up to about 20. That's an interesting question. Come on, math.
And how long did the negative period? I'm a lawyer. I don't do math. That's why I said a lot. You would do a lot. So how long did the conflict last before you got back to the blooming stage, as you've coined it?
It varied. I wasn't necessarily, you know, like checking it off on the calendar, but I feel like the conflict, I feel like maybe at the worst, at the most, it was three to five or six weeks, something like that.
Is that just torture for you? Because to me, that just sounds like torture that you're in this negative spot.
It was
That long.
So I got to tap back into the resilience of it all, because
let's take that hat off. Let's take the resilience hat off, because you got through it, right?
Yeah.
But in it, how did that feel? Because a lot of people are trying to figure out how to get out or what do I do?
Staying intact with yourself. What I had a lot of before gardening really just literally put me in a chokehold, and I'm still in that chokehold. What I was doing a lot of, besides, of course, being very busily tasked with taking care of the household, I spent most of the time as a stay-at-home mother because we had children early in the marriage. And so I was definitely tending to the domestic needs of the household. And I wouldn't say that he didn't contribute in that way. But what I was doing with my free time was finding every possible way to be as creative as possible. I did not realize what the journey was that I was on to self-discovery, because I kind of thought that I knew who I was, but in hindsight, I really did not. that's what how I could explain why I call myself a hyper creative, as in I have had so many kind of things that have had me in a chokehold in the past, but they didn't really hold me that long. Like, I remember doing stuff that's way off the wall, like sidewalk chalk art. Like, I was going to be a whole sidewalk chalk muralist, okay? There was a festival I actually went to last year in Marietta. Incredible. So, like, I could have got to that point where I'm, like, out here at festivals. You know what I'm saying? I took, like, two parking spaces and I recreated, like, this head of King Tut. It just, I was doing a lot, okay? I'm crafting with the kids, of course, so that's kind of unlocking all these other interests and, like, Mod Podge and trying to stick stuff all, you know, to each other and be decorative and trying to be a DIY home decor champion. And at one point I was going to start a whole ass juicing business. It just took like me making juice twice to be like, yo, I'm a whole ass business entrepreneur out here. Juicing legend is what I aspire to be. That lasted maybe about 6 weeks. I don't know. Doing a lot of cooking and baking and really just letting my mind be taken away by as many awesome bingeable shows as possible. I watched a lot of stuff, but I wasn't just watching TV in a passive way. I was really actually taking in, you know, some of the strategies that I saw in the characters who were having to be resilient in the way that I was being at that time. But then came along gardening. And that was such a game changer because it's like, as soon as I saw the first leaf sprout from my first house plant, or as soon as I had planted the first seed that I ever planted, or made the first failed attempt at growing a cucumber plant, I believe it was, I was very much determined to get it right, to figure out how can I do this, you know? So that creativity was able to be applied in such a robust way when I figured out how to get into the plants, because soon after I figured out how to operate with like a little bit of what I call novice landscaping and playing around with arranging some plants outside in a yard, then I was thinking about, ooh, how can I artistically arrange these plants in a large potted assortment so that I can enjoy it for myself, or maybe I can sell some of these. You know, I call myself a plantrepreneur for that reason, because not too long after figuring out how to do the plants, was I trying to figure out how to sell the plants. I didn't ultimately end up doing that, as, you know, I'm billing myself primarily as a podcaster in the plant space, but those were the ways that I was keeping my mind occupied. And in that sense, and this is what I want people who are really trying to figure something out to latch onto, in that sense, I was keeping a very significant piece of myself that he literally never had access to. So he never had my whole self. And me as a Virgo can recognize when I'm not being emotionally nurtured, and so emotionally withdrawing in the ways that I was, maybe not fully conscious of it, but emotionally withdrawing because I did not feel safe enough to really feel that I could give my all in an emotional way. So I was there and I was sincere, but not feeling safe enough to be fully present there, but just glad to have kept as much of myself as I did.
What would you say to someone going through that emotional time when you know you're divorcing, you are divorcing, that they have given all of themselves? And that's what happens a lot of times with narcissistic abuse. You're giving all of yourself plus some. So you said something interesting to me. You said you were finding yourself and you found it through creativity. I'm most likely not going to do plants because I kill them. They don't survive in my house. But I do have, you know, I have them outside and that sort of thing. But what do you say to someone that is not creative, dealing with that emotional, oh my God, is this for me? Been in this relationship 10 years. I have my children. What do you say to them that aren't as resilient and aren't as creative as yourself navigating that emotional space?
I would venture to give a prescription. And I mean, I just hope that this helps, but I'm gonna still stay in this nature kind of lane, because outside of, maybe you can't grow plants, that's fine. A connection with nature will do wonders for your emotional health. I'm gonna repeat that. A connection with nature will do wonders for your emotional health. I remember doing a lot of hiking. I just intuitively understood that I needed to be surrounded by trees. This was before I got into plants and understood all the science stuff that I now understand about it and doing the research that I've done. But at the very least, turning to nature, grounding is something that can be very helpful. I mean, it's an unspoken thing. I do not know the science like that. Like, you don't know the math. I don't know the science. Like, I know the plants. I understand how to help people connect with them and, you know, how to grow them and things like that. But just being barefoot on some grass, there's these scientific things. There's these magnetic forces that are in the very earth itself, which many of us lovingly refer to as mother, you know, going back to that mother, you know, if you feel so bold and you have the space and the opportunity, lay stomach to earth if you can. I remember reading about what benefits can be captured from just being very intentional about physically connecting with the earth in that way. I know that sounds a little on the wild side. That's very like, you know, we can imagine a Badu out there just laying on the ground humming and stuff.
Actually, it's not. I hear a lot about grounding and sometimes just getting your feet on grass, the bottom of your feet, because, you know, it grounds you to the earth. So I actually really respect your perspective of getting outside. And sometimes that's just getting fresh air, especially for the people that feel they can't even get out of bed. So I think it's like you said, go take a hike, get grounded with, right, open the blinds, get some sunlight in. I really respect that perspective. So thank you for sharing.
Get that vitamin D. I'm glad you said sun, the vitamin D from the sun, the clarity that you can get from just kind of closing your eyes and chin up to the sun, you know, and really feeling it on your face and being intentional about, like, just ask for what it is that you need. And you will be surprised at the ways that nature can bring it into you.
That's beautiful too, because a lot of people don't even know how to ask for what they need or don't, and kind of suffer in silence. So I think that's important too, is saying, I need X, because that X can be very different for all of us. So that is also important, which brings me to my next question. And I love to talk about children because I feel like children are often forgotten during the divorce process. So how did you prepare your children? How did you protect them and shield them and all of that great stuff while you were going through the process?
That is such a great question, because I never really thought about exactly what I was doing. I just knew that they needed something consistent. And so there were certain experiences that we would consistently have. And of course, as you can imagine with us, that was connecting with nature and coming along with me on those hikes and being very intentional about finding ways to make it an adventure for them, to stimulate their sense of wonder by tapping into my sense of wonder and, you know, trying to mirror that. And so what I can definitely say that I did the most consistently was being intentional about finding a consistent activity for us to engage in. So no matter what the situation was, where we were at, what we were going through, we were consistently taking walks, whether it be in nature or just around the neighborhood. We have to be very intentional about, or I could say, just speaking for myself, was making sure that we had those connections, especially with nature.
What did that look like in your family?
I remember two things about that in particular. Now, I can't say that I did not receive support from my family, but I could say that the way that it was perceived by me, especially in the first year or two, I did not feel supported by my family. So I'm not going to get into that too much, but just to answer your question about, like, the way that I engage them and the questions that I ask them or the questions that I answered for them. First and foremost, because it was not my decision, as in I was not the one who basically pulled the plug on the thing, and he walked away in such a cowardly way, I was like, you don't get to be cowardly in making me have to break it to them. So I insisted and I forced it, not physically, but I was very, very intensely like insisting, you will be the one to tell them. I just figured that that was the order of operations that made the most sense for me, because I already knew that I was going to have to deal with everything else after that. So I wasn't going to rip the Band-Aid off. That was a boundary that I set. And so he had to tell him in whatever way that he told him. And pretty sure it was raggedy. I don't really remember that moment, but I know it was a terrible time for them because they responded in a way that was just utterly devastation.
What was their response once they knew what was happening?
It was just, it was crying, you know, it was emoting in a very intense way. And I knew that I was going to comfort them in any way that I possibly could. I was having a very particularly woo-woo time around then, where I remember reading about the vibrational qualities of different types of materials and especially plants. And I found out something about roses and how they have a frequency that is like angelic, if I'm not mistaken. Like there's something about the frequency of roses that can, you know, it, when used with a certain intention, can bring about comfort. So what I did was, I think I either had some roses already in a bouquet or I went and got some. And I know that part of me even getting that bouquet, it was like me being intentional about giving flowers to myself. And I know I use this word intentional a lot, but hey, it's very real for me. It was a very significant part of the process and just speaking to the awareness of me knowing what I was doing and doing the things so purposely. So I remember getting rose petals and putting them in their pillowcases when they went to bed. I was just like, whatever it takes. I don't know. I can say whatever I can say, but I can also hopefully try to inject some kind of other type of energy in whatever ways that I possibly could in order to kind of like foster whatever kind of comfort that I could provide for them.
I've never heard of that. That's beautiful.
I almost forgot that I even did that. It was a lot going on. And there was another thing where I remember specifically, it's crazy because I remember telling, I didn't tell all of them at once, but I remember telling my daughter, there was just a moment where I felt very led to tell her that none of this is your fault. This doesn't have anything to do. All of the things that have transpired over the last few months, it had been actually maybe about a year or a little bit more than a year into the process when I told her this, because it just occurred to me that you need to like give her permission to understand that like, this is not a burden for her to carry. I'm very sensitive to the fact that children perceive things so differently. And it's very easy for them to make up these stories in their mind about how when things go wrong, especially with adults in their lives, kids will go to great lengths to find a way to make it on their fault. So I remember being very intentional about sharing with her, like, no, this is not on you. The things that have happened were not even things that I expected were going to happen, but I'm here to support you in whatever way that you need so that we can get through this together, and acknowledging to her that I understand it's hard for you, but it's also hard for me.
And I love that. And I would like to encourage you to keep talking to your children, because we've done a couple of shows where people, there was one study done about children and divorce and how they don't really speak their truths and they just want to fix it. They want to fix it for you. They want to fix it for dad. And they try to become the superheroes. And because they're doing that and they don't quite understand that it is not their fault, then, you know, their education suffers, their well-being suffers. So I think it is crucial to parents to continue to talk to their children so they understand it's not your fault. I know you're going to try to be the superhero, but you don't have to. We are going to do that. Heck, I think I want to put roses in my son's pillowcase just to see if he calms down a little bit.
I put it in mine too.
That is right. That was hurt. Maybe I'll calm down a little bit. That's beautiful to hear different strategies that parents have. And most importantly, that your children know that you love them. You both love them. And it's not their fault. And I think that's the number one thing they need to understand, that there's a lot of transition, but not necessarily anything you did. Something you mentioned is important to me. I know you said you didn't want to get into it. You mentioned that you didn't feel in the beginning that your family supported you, and has that changed now?
I'll just say it because I've never really said it before publicly, but it needs to be said. I just had a weird-ass relationship with my sister, who I was living with at the time. And there was just things that I've never even really spoken to her about in regards to this. But there was a lot of ways that I was made to feel when I was seeking refuge with her that were just very unnecessary. And there was ways that she could have been emotionally supportive, but I'm not sure if she really knew how to be supportive in that way. So the way that it was perceived by me was not being supportive. Now, I cannot disregard the fact that she was able to provide refuge as far as me being able to stay with her in the time of need in that way. But anybody who's ever been in a situation where they were a somewhat involuntary guest at someone's house and not made to feel welcome in ways that involve, what is that word? Microaggressions or passive aggressiveness. That was what I experienced. And it was very uncomfortable, but because I needed to get through what I was going through and everything else that was happening, as in starting a whole damn podcast at that time and successfully building it literally from the grassroots in such a significant way, I experienced a lot of growth from the beginning into like the first few months and beyond of my podcast. I didn't have trouble finding my audience, is what I'm saying, you know? And so I noticed that our relationship changed in some way because I noticed that she was behaving differently towards me. And I didn't fully kind of understand what it was. And I don't want to speak for what she was feeling inside, but I perceived it as jealousy and it didn't feel good to me. So that made me feel unsupported in that way.
So how did you find your support system during the divorce, during your transition? Because that's just as important as where you lay your head. So where did you find that support?
Well, interestingly enough, like I said, with them grassroots, I'm thinking like every little, or not every single one, but so many of those little tiny little delicate blades of grass that was rooting was like coming in the form of guests that I had early in the show, and I'm getting a little emotional, but I'm going to try to speak on through it. Just connecting with the tribe that I created, with the audience that was established early on. Those were the people that were strangers. It was a lot of people who I really didn't know like that. A lot of them were very good and very kind to me. And we established friendships that are enduring to this day. But I did also run into some people who were a bit manipulative and had some very dark intentions for how they were trying to cause harm to me. And that was not fun. But I would say that, you know, to answer your question, what support looked like outside of family support was being able to tap into the tribe that was just as excited about Black people having plants as me. But also, and I remember something as significant as having car trouble with the car that I shouldn't have bought because it was basically a lemon, and getting in a situation where even just bringing that up in a conversation, a young lady was very kind to walk me through the steps of setting up a GoFundMe where I was able to raise over $5,000 in like 10 days. Just to help me get my car fixed. That lady didn't even really know me like that. But we were talking about the Black people plant stuff. And I was, you know, hesitant about doing something like that because I had never done anything like that before. And I wasn't really sure, you know, who's really going to support this. But in seeing how strangers showed up in that way, that was very affirming.
That's beautiful. because I was going to ask you too, when was the moment you put out your first show? And you kind of explained to us how you felt about it. And that's interesting. I'm going to use God, the universe, however people feel about it, how God shows up in the darkest, craziest times and the craziest ways. What was it like putting out a show? How did you feel about that? What was the sense of accomplishment, especially while you were, this was 3 weeks of a divorce. So what was that like for you?
It was like giving birth again, because I had sat on it for more than 9 months and I had a lot of fear that I wasn't fully acknowledging around just putting it out. I would feel convicted when having a conversation with like a cashier, and I'm always the one to come in and everybody's going to have a good time by the time I walk out the door. And the cashier being like, oh my God, you're so fun. You're so funny. Do you have a show or something, like a podcast? You should do a podcast. I would listen to it. And me being like kind of terrified, like, how dare you see me in that way that I'm trying to see myself. I'm getting there. And I remember telling a lady one time, just remember this name, because I knew the name of the podcast. And I told her, and I was like, just check for that in like 30 days. It'll be out. And I came through on that promise. I did put it out within that time. But it was very much, it was such a release to get it out into the world. It was November 2019, I believe it was like a week before Thanksgiving. It was November 19th, 2019. And I just felt very compelled to go ahead and put it out into the world after having played around with recording some stuff. I have all kind of stuff that has never been released before. But I said, you know what? It was just a somewhat random evening where I had spent a lot of time that day and trying to figure out some aspects of how to put the podcast out. And I remember reading an article where there were some Black plant enthusiasts that had been interviewed in that. And I was just like, there's a voice that needs to be put to this. The articles are beautiful. Love those. But what about the people who want to have that audio experience? What about the people who want to connect this to a person, a personality, a podcast? So I was excited to just jump up and be like, you know what? This is the time to just put my stake in the ground and be like, I'm here, and, you know, plant that seed and watch it germinate and bloom into something really beautiful. And it definitely did that, because it was right. It was the time. The time was right.
What about the moment when you pushed upload your first episode? What was that like for you?
It was literally like, okay, so you plant the seed, you, of course, you have a hole, you put the seed in that hole, and then you kind of cover it back up with soil, depending on what kind of seed you're planting. But let's just say it was one that needs to be covered. And then after you cover it, you water it in, like you seal the deal. That's it. And after that, it's just some waiting, you know? So pressing upload very much felt like putting the water on top of that seed and being like, watch what happened with this. Watch, it's going to be great.
And when did you start experiencing the bloom of the podcast in your community? What was that like for you?
There's a few ways that I could refer to what success looked and felt like for me. It definitely had a lot to do with seeing how the audience was growing. I was able to gauge what growth was like for me by starting an Instagram account. So you can follow me at Black in the Garden on Instagram if you haven't already, you know. But in doing that and seeing how people were just, you know, interested and engaging and coming through and asking questions or sharing whatever they were sharing and embracing me in this community of fellow Black plant enthusiasts, I very much felt like, you know, in finding the tribe, that was a great way to determine that, like, yeah, people are definitely interested in this. And then I also was very blessed to see that somehow I found out about like these charts and these, you know, the analytics of it all. And I noticed that the show was performing pretty well in the category that it was in. And I believe within like 2 years, I saw that it was featured on the Apple Podcasts Black History Month, there was a lot of me going out and just kind of figuratively knocking on doors and be like, hey, y'all, I'm here. Would love to come on your show. Would love to talk to you. You know, I understood that there was more white people than black people in the space. So I was just like, if y'all not engaging me, then are y'all really about this diversity that y'all say that y'all are about? So, and just knocking on those doors, because I also understood, we understand as podcasters that cross promotion makes a big difference in how you're able to grow your show. And so just wanting to connect with Tribe as many possible ways that I could, and just being very diligent about that. So, and seeing all of those things that I just described to you, that's what growth looked like for me.
I do have a question, because you did all the things. You survived divorce. You survived picking yourself up. You survived being resilient. Describe for someone who was stuck what that feels like on the other side.
It feels so great. It is empowering, okay? It is super empowering. I was very blessed to have started to follow Lisa Nichols, who is, those of you know, it's N-I-C-H-O-L-S. She described this process just as a speaker. I was very much interested in, you know, taking my talent into the speaking arena. And we'll come back to that in a second, because I have an exciting announcement. But in and being interested in getting into the speaking arena, I naturally found her. And I remembered seeing her when I watched The Secret a long time ago on that, and just kind of keeping up with her from there. She shared her process of doing a thing that you're proud of and executing on that thing, or at least executing on a step in that process, and then celebrating yourself and starting the process over again, and not overlooking that celebration part, because that's a necessary step to keep you motivated. So I definitely, that was very helpful for me in it just staying in it and staying consistent with it at the beginning.
Well, we are definitely celebrating you here. We applaud you. We are proud of you. And whatever you like to share, please do so now before I close out the show.
Black in the Garden is, of course, the podcast that you should be finding at this very second, if your hands are free, on all the podcast players and platforms, or whatever we're calling them, pod hubs and things. And then on the website, blkinthegarden.com is where you can, that's the hub for all the things that are going on. Many exciting developments are in the process at this very moment of talking. And by the time everybody hears this, we will be getting ready for October appearance on the one and only international TEDx stage. I will be doing a TED Talk that will be airing. Now, I don't know when it'll be airing, but I know that that will be occurring in the middle of October 2023. And I'm very proud to talk more about everything relating to Black people, plants, and nature in that talk, and hoping that it's going to be incredible.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Kola, for sharing your powerful and inspiring journey with us. Your story of growth, resilience, and transformation is truly remarkable and inspiring to me. I'm going to try redoing some plants here, because you haven't bio me. I'm sure your story will resonate with our listeners. As Kola said, her podcast is Black in the Garden, and I believe she is also on social media at Black in the Garden. Thank you again for joining us on Legally Uncensored. Remember, even in the darkest moments, there is always a chance for new growth and blooming into a beautiful new season of life. Until next time, take care and keep flourishing.